Welcome to the Green Up Possibilities podcast, empowering you with information about what is possible, improbable, and nearly impossible with money. Brought to you by Green Up Wealth Management.
Hi, I'm Kyle Barclay, Senior Vice President and Wealth Advisor at Green Up Wealth Management. Imagine you were told you may only have a few years to live. How would you feel? What would you think about? What would you do? Our special guest today is Karen Beta. She's a member of our GreenUp community, and I've had the privilege to work with Karen and her husband, Mike, for nearly a decade as their wealth advisor. Welcome, Karen.
Hey, Kyle.
I'd love to start off with just an introduction and get into a brief overview of your misdiagnosis and ultimately what you found out about the diagnosis. So with that being said, Karen, please introduce yourself a bit.
Hi. Last fall was quite the adventure for my husband and I. I was sent to a hematologist for an unrelated, like something with B12. And in a conversation with him, I happened to mention that I had done some genetic research. And he was curious about it and asked me if I would bring it up. And I did. And he called me and told me that it looked like I had a cancer, a blood cancer, based on the genetic testing. And he told me what it was. And it was really a shock. But I wouldn't see him again until November, which I think is just kind of a horrible way to spend the fall. But my husband and I talked about it, and we were out for a country drive one day. And I said, I think we need to call Kyle because we need two things. We need some information, financial, and we need some information, medical. And we kind of did that. And then when November rolled around, the doctor did some additional genetic testing. And he said, man, he said, it looks like you're in the clear as far as the major components of this cancer goes. But if you have it, it is like a wild card that is so slim that I would be surprised. And with that, he sent me off and he said, we'll watch you for a while. But he says, I think you're totally in the clear. And it was like best Thanksgiving present ever.
Karen, I just can't even imagine just what you felt. I remember when you first told me and what I felt, but to have that diagnosis, especially in the time of year when we're prepping for the holidays and all the good things that are inevitably to come, and to hear that, very scary moment.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, it wasn't anything that we had ever considered. I figured we would just roll into old age. And actually, my plan is to be really, really active, get sick and die, just like boom, in my 80s or something. This was not part of my plan at all.
Far from it. It's one of those unfortunate realities that can happen, and it does happen to many out there. As we think about the ideal aging and what we want the end to look like, let's take our listeners back to your earlier life and a little bit about your background. We'd love to share with the audience about your childhood upbringing, your family, education, career, some significant memories or events along the way, if you don't mind sharing.
I'm what you call an oil brat. It's kind of like an army brat, but your dad's not in the military. So we moved around a lot. I think I lived in like 10 houses, 3 states, 5 cities before I turned 18. So we were always the new kids in the school, new kids on the block, which made us very self-sufficient as a group of 5. We were kind of a terror amongst ourselves, but God help you if you came after one of us, because then you had all of us to deal with. It did give me a lot of really diverse experiences. I grew up in West Texas for a large part of it, and then went to California, which dead end my Texas accent. For a long time, people couldn't figure out where I was from. And I'd say Texas, they go, no way. But it did prepare me for, in the late 80s, I moved to Mexico, to Guadalajara to be exact, with my 2 small sons. And having moved around a lot as a kid made me ready for that adventure. That was like the best. I really liked that. But then my older son flunked English in the first grade. And considering it was his first language, that was not good. So I figured it was time to to bring the kids and come back to the States. And I moved back to Oklahoma where all my family were. And I've been here since 88. I've worked in corporate, usually in the oil business, because that's what I grew up knowing, or in nonprofits, pastoral care. I'm trained as a chaplain, but I also have a business degree. So I kind of feel like I cover a lot of different aspects in the work that I've done. So the last job I had, I was running a small company for about 10 years and then retired. I kind of keep my hand in the mix, working with people and stuff like that on different subjects. Like, I'm really good in genealogy. I help people with genealogy research. I've helped a couple of people find family they've discovered on DNA, like 23andMe or something. And they go, oh, it looks like I'm related, but I can't find these people. And I find them. I love it. I'm like a detective.
You are like a detective.
Yeah.
Hold on. I want to take a step back. What took you to Mexico?
I was asked to come down and work for the Episcopal Diocese down there. I taught English as a second language and also situational ethics at the seminary there. And I also worked as an administrator for the diocese because nobody in the office spoke English and they're a missionary diocese. And so they work closely with the New York City Episcopal Church. It was the best. It was a great 4 years. We really enjoyed living down there immensely. We were poor, but we had a really lovely time. We enjoyed Mexico quite a bit.
Enough time to really get the full experience.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mourned the loss of Mexico for about 10 years. It was really my heart for a long time. The people and the language and it was really different than how I had grown up. A lot of family, very family oriented. There's no cafeterias in any schools because everybody goes home for lunch. So I mean, it was pretty cool family oriented wise.
It's a very great part about that part of the world, just how focused and how much family is such a cornerstone, especially the Hispanic community, the Latin community. I got to experience that myself studying abroad for 3 weeks in Cuernavaca. So I can relate a bit, but 4 years, wow, jealous.
Yeah, I learned a lot of extra Spanish with Fred Flintstone. When he's hanging off a cliff and saying, auxilio, you know he's asking for help. So and watching shows dubbed in English like Magnum P.I. or Remington Steel, my Spanish got really, really good.
If we fast forward or rewind a bit, let's chat a little bit more about how you met Mike and becoming a parent. Just kind of how your family has blossomed to where it is today.
When I came back from Mexico, about a year later, I was sitting in church and I looked over and there was this very handsome man, very handsome man about four pews over. And I asked my mom, who is that? And she goes, that's Mike Beda. I was like, he looks very handsome. And she goes, he's a good man, which was my mom's highest praise of the opposite sex. I was asked to go along with a group of people on New Year's Eve. And when the bell tolled at midnight, Beda and I looked at each other and it was like, we were it, because it was my brother and his girlfriend and a priest in the seminarian. So if either of us was going to kiss on midnight, it was going to be between the two of us.
What a party.
It was. And that was when we started dating pretty much. Yeah. And it took 4 years before he finally popped the question. And then we stepped into family with teenagers, which is always a challenge. And we did it with a move also, because we went from Oklahoma City to Tulsa. He had bought the company he'd been working for since college, and its home base was in Tulsa. But we moved here, and it's just, to give you an idea of what our family life is like, my youngest one day, he said, I know this is really going to hurt your feelings, Mom, but Dad is my favorite. So, I mean, you know, you can't do much better than that as a stepdad to have your stepson say, you're my favorite. Sorry, Mom.
Oh,
yeah. His daughter loves us. My sons love him. And you would not know that we weren't together from the very beginning.
Well, in timeline wise, we're in Tulsa at this point. About which year is this?
That was 93. We moved here, got married, moved here. So yeah. Wow. 30 plus years ago.
So it's 1993. We're getting settled into Tulsa and that chapter of life and the corporate jobs and working and saving, building that next chapter, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And we fast forward and you get to a point where you feel like you both have the right pieces in place to retire.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a relative game plan for the future of what you want to do and how you want to do it, when you want to do it, and with whom you want to do it. So as we think about that chapter, tell me a little bit more about life leading up to retirement, and then what was retirement like at the beginning?
Well, we retired at different times. I had a back surgery, a fusion, in March of 2014. And that month was also the month we closed on selling our company. And so I don't know how I did that, because I was the business manager of the company and I'm on pretty high painkillers and I'm trying to close a deal on selling a company and I'm making spreadsheets and calculating stuff. So I retired at that point because my job was null and void. You know, they had their own general managers, and Mike stayed on for another 2 or 3 years. So my early retirement was, what do I do with myself? And I pretty much had a handle on it by the time Mike retired, and I could kind of walk him through some of it. Whereas I felt like the pioneer for retirement in our little duo here. But I've been working since I was like 18. And it was the first time in my life that I got to say, what do I really want to do with my time? And I started doing things like, I'd always wanted to play the piano. And I saw a sign down the road, down the street, and it said piano lessons. And it was this little 80-year-old church organ player lady. And I took a lesson and she said, go get this sheet music. And I went and got the sheet music and came home with a piano as well. And I went and told her, I said, so here's my gig. I want to learn how to play the piano, but I don't want to learn theory. I don't care what key it's in. I'm not playing any music that I don't like. And please don't expect me to come to recitals. And that was in September. And I think my first recital was in a Barnes & Noble at Christmas, because she's a very persuasive lady. But I started doing things like that. I started sewing. I've been sewing clothes since high school, but I learned how to tailor clothes. And I don't know, I just started doing things that I really, really enjoyed. And I liked it.
Had the time, the space to really explore what you wanted to do. I naturally had some ideas in mind, but
yeah,
Mike's gone at work and you've got the house to yourself to do whatever.
Yeah. And I did. And it was a lot of fun to do that, to have that leisure time to do that. It was an adjustment. I'm not going to say it was all fun. 8 hours a day is a long time to try to fill in the beginning. And then you get busy. You get really busy.
Indeed, that's a good thing to have in retirement, busy with the things you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About how old were you when you retired?
Well, it was 10 years ago, so I was 56. So I was very young. And I remember asking Mike about 4 months in, after I'd recovered from my surgery, I asked him, I said, do I need to go back to work? And he looked at his portfolio and he looked at, you know, where we were at, and he goes, no. And I went, thank goodness. I'm just really thankful to be with somebody who's financially turned in the way that I am as well. So we had money, we had investments, and I could enjoy life and check out things I'd always wanted to do.
Well, that's real interesting, because you said early on that, you know, you were poor starting out.
Yeah. I've lived below the poverty line for a number of years in my 20s. It was tough. So, but I was frugal and was raising my boys as best I could before I married Mike Beta. But there is really something to having a like-minded partner when it comes to finances, to be honest with you. And he and I are like two little peas in a pod when it comes to that. Because I don't ever want to go back just eating onions and potatoes for dinner, you know, or buying my kids clothes in a secondhand store. I know what it's like to be there. So I work really hard to not be in that position again.
I can speak firsthand, partnering with you both, how much intentionality, how much care, how much genuineness you put into your life, financially and non-financially. So it's no surprise to see you both where you're at today. and what all it took and all the sacrifices to get there. True inspiration in more ways than one.
Thank you.
So let's fast forward. We're enjoying retirement, waiting for Mike to retire. What was the catalyst for Mike to feel confident and saying, I'd like to join you in retirement?
I think it was that I asked him to retire so that he could spend time with me. He was still quite heavily working. The man probably would have worked well until 80 if he could have, because it was his comfort zone. He knew what to do there. Retirement was, he grew up on a farm in Iowa, and he was pulling a man's load since he was 10. I mean, he was on the tractor, the corn picker, everything at 10 years old. His dad used to put blocks of wood on the pedals so that he could reach it. And he didn't know what it would look like to not work. And I think he was a little uncertain about that. But I wanted to travel, and he was working a job that, you know, didn't give him a lot of vacation. And I think I enticed him with a couple of really good trips. He was like, he really wanted to do them. And he was, maybe it's time. Maybe it's time to stop working. He's 78. So I think he was 71 when he retired. And I retired at 56. We're about 12 years apart. But it was delightful when he did.
You both then had the time to enjoy more time together and all the mm-hmm. things you wanted to do together. Like travel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And go visit kids. We have a son who's in the Air Force. Kind of go see him where he's at. One of the things we did was, my birthday is Talk Like a Pirate Day. And it's International Talk Like a Pirate Day. And we went to Maine and went on a sailing ship for my birthday, where you raise the masts and the whole nine yards. It was just lovely. And that kind of stuff happens because you plan well and you enjoy each other. And you take the time to do it. Our best times are hanging out together. I'm very fortunate.
As it should be. So we're both enjoying retirement. Things are going relatively well. We have the freedom to explore the world, spend time with family and friends. And then there's this diagnosis out there, one of the worst kinds to get. Karen, if you would, could you explain a little bit about your initial reaction and the impact it had on you and Mike?
The initial reaction was stunned, which you hear a lot from people when they get a diagnosis that's a tough one like that. And we did a lot of talking amongst ourselves. And then we decided that we had two big areas, maybe three big areas that we needed to address to kind of help with the worry. One was financial. Another one was information about the disease. And then the third was going to be, what would we need as far as a team? I call it Team Beta. And for the financial, the first thing we thought was, we needed to call you, Kyle, and you would run your little Monte Carlo, whatever they call that thing. But you would run the financial scenarios, and you would come back and let us know how we were going to be able to afford this, because the medicine for the disease was not going to be covered by my Medicare. And it could cost anywhere from $8,000 to $20,000 a month. And I would probably live just long enough to go through most of our retirement money, and kind of needed to know how that was going to go. And we called you, felt sorry for you, because I know you weren't expecting that afternoon either. And you came back and you gave us the numbers, and we could put that aside and then go get some information. And for me, information is key. And then we talked about who our team would be, who would help us get through that situation. So I think that's how we spent the first month, was gathering information. And then it was just a waiting game until November. It's kind of how that played.
And do you remember that call? Those are the calls that I'm here for. Those are the calls that you never want to get. Those are the calls that you're here for the most in this industry. I appreciate the trust and confidence, Karen. Pardon my getting a bit emotional. Very scary moment for everybody. So as we digest and we put the pieces together of what our options are, what we can do, what we can't do, what could be and what could not be, Team Beta's restructured or reaffirmed. We have that initial diagnosis and you're going through the appropriate steps with this type of diagnosis. And Karen, what's the name?
It's called polycythemia vera. It's a case where your bone marrow makes too many red blood cells to the point where then your bone marrow gets exhausted. And the risk of stroke before you get into leukemia and other stuff, it's just one of those that keeps morphing as it progresses along. I'd never heard of it, to be honest with you, before.
Likewise. So we're going through the natural motions with potential treatment and further investigation into the severity, and you're working with your doctor on this. And the misdiagnosis happened in September, right?
Like the 8th of September, and then I wouldn't see him again until November the 9th, which is 2 months of just wondering, you know, wondering what 2024 is going to look like, 2025. When do you tell the kids? Am I going to get to stay in my home? I mean, all those thoughts are going through, and talking with you helped that a great deal. I think October would have been a lot harder if we hadn't known that we probably wouldn't lose everything. And then my daughter's a bioengineer who'd look for a cure for cancer. And so a conversation with her was very helpful as well.
A lot of factors.
Mm-hmm.
Consuming factors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really want to reiterate, though, that for me, information is key. Just knowing all the different scenarios that you played out for us based on the information we gave you, and then the information I got from my daughter, Kat, all of that allowed us to sleep better by October 1st. Just a little bit better where we could go on. So with a little like daily life normal. It's important to know who to call, who you want to be a part of a trip like that, because it was a trip.
Indeed, in many ways. So as we think about living with this diagnosis, naturally, this changes all priorities. It changes your entire lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
As you reflect on mortality,
mm-hmm,
and life's purpose, can you share a little bit about the philosophical insights you gained, personal growth and perspective shifts? The question, why do bad things happen to good people?
Wow. That's a whole book in and of itself, isn't it?
Indeed.
Because this disease is a genetic mutation that takes place after birth, usually due to like an illness or something will trigger it. It wasn't like having brown eyes and brown hair. You know, I didn't inherit this and I wasn't going to pass it on. And I felt good about that. Philosophically, I don't know that I had anything, Kyle, to be honest with you. I am a conditioned organizer. Growing up, that was how I was trained, because I'm a commander type personality, but that wasn't seen as ladylike in the 50s. So I was told, you can be organized, but don't be bossy. And so my way of handling this was to be as organized as I possibly could and to get all my ducks in a row. And the only thing that I would say from a philosophical standpoint is I believe it takes a village, whatever you're going through. In business, we had, our name of our company was PECO, P-E-C-O, and we had Team PECO. And it was made up of a CPA, our investment people, the health insurance people, just a whole group that helped us run our business as efficiently and as profitably as possible. And I believe the same thing is true when you go through life. I took that philosophy into this situation to figure out who in our life is a soft place to land. Like, who can you share this information with? And it's received and you get back what you need. You know, who do you want to help you financially? Who do you want to be your doctor? Who are the friends that you can call and say, can you bring dinner? To me, it's more than just going something alone. If I had a philosophy, I think that would be it, that it's a team effort.
It does take a village. It takes a great team. It's a community. It's about relationships and sharing and caring. Gosh forbid any negative event happens, but having those relationships and that community to band together to help. That's what it's about.
Yeah, it really is.
Let's talk a bit about the discovery of the misdiagnosis, the events leading up to the good news. What was that like?
I will say that because we have the ability these days to go online and look up tests once they're completed in your chart, before I saw the doctor on the 9th, I had gotten pretty sure that I was going to get good news. I would say 60% sure when I saw him on the 9th that he was going to tell me I was okay, because I have WebMD. Google was my best friend. I was always looking stuff up.
The online research. I know my doctor and some doctor clients I work with, they say you shouldn't do
that. It's like a big don't. Don't look up, don't do. I will say that I've gotten very good in the last 4 years in reading peer-reviewed science papers out of medical journals or the Mayo Clinic or Johns Hopkins. I consider those to be valid sources for information. And those were the type of papers that I was reading to get my information. So I felt pretty well medically informed, as it were. The other thing was, I felt pretty certain that if I got news I wasn't thinking I was going to get, but if I got it, I also knew that I would be able to go anywhere in the U.S. for treatment if I wanted to. I didn't have to stay in town. That was also comforting to know that if I wanted to go to where the experts were, I would be able to. That was just another part of my information gathering. By the time Mike and I walked into the hematologist's office on the 9th, I was nervous, but I had more hope than I did on September the 8th when he told me what he thought.
Were you expecting good news?
I think I didn't want to jinx it, so I don't know that I would say I was expecting it. If I'd had to take a Las Vegas bet, I think the odds would have been in my favor.
Totally get that. Being optimistic, having a positive spirit through all of this, it's one of the most challenging mindsets to have, but one of the most critical. So you go into the doctor's office. What was that moment like? Start to finish with the doctor.
The doctor is a very businesslike bedside manner. And so when he came in, it just like pull up the computer. He looks at the computer. He says, well, this is what we found. You know, and he explained it all. And I'm sitting there going, yes, in my head, I'm thinking, yes, I know that. Yes, I know that. Sounds good to me. And when he was done, it was like, do you have any questions? And it was like, no, I think that's good. And he goes, okay. Well, he says, we'll do blood work over the next 4 months. And then he was out the door. And Mike looked at me and he goes, did you want to know anything else? And I go, dude, we found the most important part of that conversation. And that's that it does not look like I have polycythemia vera. I think we should take that and run out the door. He goes, okay, sounds good to me. So we did. And we got to the car and we high-fived. And then we called you, Kyle. And then we called our children and who we had told in the ensuing weeks after we had talked to you. And we went and got ice cream. Because what do you do after something like that?
Ice cream.
You go celebrate.
Oh, my gosh. I can't imagine the sense of relief and the sense of, oh my gosh, we dodged a bullet there.
Oh, yeah. 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 It was definitely the Snoopy happy dance all the way home. That's what we call it in our family when you have really good news. It's like you were doing the Snoopy happy dance.
Well deserving.
Mm-hmm. It really was. Yeah. December was awesome. December was awesome. You could just sit back and plan for trips and to be with family and know you have time.
So a few months later, here we are. How has it changed, if at all, your perspective on life? Has it changed your priorities? Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yes, it has changed our priorities. We are getting ready to do a major remodel in our house of the master bath. And that was one thing that we were putting off. And I turned to Mike and said, I don't want to put it off. This bathroom is almost 25 years old. And I really want something different. And I want some patio furniture. we are like-minded, my husband and I. We are very frugal people. And last fall really taught me that there's frugal and then there's frugal. And I want to enjoy the years that I have. And so I'm about to get a new iPhone, which thrills me no end.
I'm with you.
And Mike is like, you know, well, what's that going to cost us? And I go, you know, I don't really care. And last year, I think I would have, but my iPhone is a very old one. And I think it's time to start really weighing what is smart frugality and what is like, I think you need to enjoy the life that you planned for all those years that we saved. Let's try living that way for a while.
So Karen, as we think about the next 10 years and what you want to do, naturally being a bit more confident, a bit more urgency, if you will, on some of the house updates and upgrading technology, what do you and Mike want to do together? What do you want your next 10 years to be filled with?
I think it would be experiences for us. We want to take some classes together, geology and history. And we've talked about going to Mexico or Italy and renting an apartment for a month or so. I'm really inclined to go to Mexico. Want to do some travel with our kids. Seoul in South Korea is on our list to go to as well. We have, I've lost count of how many grandkids we have, but we have five in town and we do stuff with them as well. Health is a biggie for us. We have a trainer that we work out with twice a week. And my goal, especially since Mike is so much older than I am, is to really work for a healthy end, to really make sure that we take care of ourselves. I just can't imagine not doing that. Kyle, I'll say this, you know, I know that you probably know this, but Mike and I are still having to like stay at home quite a bit.
Yep.
Because of COVID-19.
Yep.
And because of various health issues. And so for us, what the question you're asking, we don't even know when that'll be possible.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So for us, and I'm amazed that we do as well as we do. This is almost like the last 4 years have been like a COVID quarantine honeymoon for us. We really delight in each other and do well with each other. And so if we can continue to do that, whether or not we have large trips or do big expense items, as long as we have our health and we have our family and we have each other, I think that the next 10 years or 15 years will be as delightful as what we've had up to this point. We send you pictures of our front porch picnics all the time, don't we?
You do. And they're great.
Yeah. Yeah. Dog at our feet, neighborhood in front of us. And we just sit and visit and talk about the concepts of the universe. I mean, we are a cute couple. It's not the way I would put it.
Very much so. Life is a lot more fulfilling people than so much the places. The places can enhance it. They're great experiences.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about spending money. It's not about lavish trips. It's about enjoying those who are special in your life and spending time with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's living your best life.
It's true. It's true. We have soirees on our front yard lawn with fairy lights in the trees and grandkids playing underneath. And honestly, it doesn't get much better than that.
Big smile on my face. So Karen, as we conclude, what words of wisdom would you have for others facing medical challenges or really any other challenges in their life?
I would say to know who you can trust. Not everybody in our lives is a soft place for us to land when we're in crisis or in need. And if you have someone who will really listen to you as you go through that, that is worth its weight in gold. And then the second thing I would say is don't wait until you have a moment like that to think about who your village is.
So well said. As I summarize or attempt to summarize, Your stories about hope, living your best life, relationships, and carpe diem. Is that fair?
I would say so, yeah.
Karen, I want to say thank you. Thank you for sharing your story. It's an amazing story, and I hope the audience finds some inspiration and maybe even comfort. How can the audience connect with you or follow you?
I actually have a YouTube channel. They're my porch talk stories because I tell stories on stage. And you can find it under Karen Bina.
Karen, I hope the audience also enjoyed and finds themselves doing a Snoopy happy dance and maybe even on their way to get some ice cream. From the entire team at GreenUp Wealth Management, I'm Kyle Barclay, and thank you for listening.
GreenUp Wealth Management is a registered investment advisor, and the opinions expressed are our own. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any individual. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Past performance is not indicative of future performance.